Hey, everybody. It's Adam from the Stick and Hack Show. Just a quick FYI. We recorded this podcast and the YouTube video weeks ago here for this specific episode. So we are not really necessarily talking about the coronavirus and the impact it's having on the world or on the sporting world. But wanted to let you know that we are decided as a group to move forward with this episode. It's fantastic, as for no other reason, but just to give you a respite from everything that's happening and the weirdness that's happening across the sports world, as well as your own individual world. We want to make sure that we gave you a little bit of entertainment and enlightenment here between the news cycle of coronavirus. So enjoy the Stick and Hack Show this week. The boys of Portaleith, a whiskey and gin distillery out of Edinburgh, Scotland, are on the show. It's a good one. Enjoy it and stay safe. This is the Stick and Hack Show. This week we have Ian and Patty from Leith Distillery talking about our favorite topic, spirits, whiskey, castles, golf, the history of all of those on today's Stick and Hack Show. Here we go.
This is the Stick and Hack Show. Conversation, discussion, debate, and golf talk from a stick, Mike Ryan, and the hack, Adam Grubb. Boys, you are up.
All right, everybody, welcome in to the Stick and Hack Show. I am your host, Adam Grubb. That is your host, Mike Ryan, the stick. Mike, hello, how are you? Good morning.
I am, and I said I wasn't going to say this, but I'm really excited today because right. We've got two guys here that are awesome.
Yeah, we've got in studio guests today. They are from, by the way, this is the most sophisticated golf show in the free world. Guests are founders of Portaleith Distillery. Patty and Ian are on the program. Boys, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Exceedingly well. Thank you very much.
Good. You guys are coming to us all the way from Edinburgh. Edinburgh. What is it?
Edinburgh.
What am I saying?
You're saying Edinburgh.
You sound right. Like you're in Edinburgh. Germany or something like that. It's okay, Edinburgh. It's a borough.
Okay.
So. This roll is, that R.
All right, everybody, calm down. Yeah. This is is off to a bad start.
I thought we were speaking English.
They're not from here. How about we start there? Patty and Ian, we welcome you into the program, talking to us about their distillery, whiskey, gin, and the connection between one of the oldest spirits in the world and the great game of golf, and we'll get to you guys in just a little bit. Welcome to the Stick and Hack Show. Mike, you know, when we talk about history and heritage here, first up is the history and heritage of golf. And when you think of whiskey, you think of this long time-tested tradition of a spirit, and the same with golf. You think of this time-tested sport, one of the oldest sports in the world. And the modern game of golf, and it doesn't matter where you look, there's different origin stories, right? Much like Spider-Man and Batman, there's all these different origin stories. The same with golf. It originated in the 15th century Scotland, which, by the way, is where our guests are from.
Edinburgh.
Oh, great. Good for you. You got it right off the top of the nose. I'm proud of you. The 18th hole round was created at the old course at St. Andrews in 1764. Golf's first major and the world's oldest tournament in existence is the Open Championship.
I'm glad you called it the Open and not the British Open, because they freak out about that.
Yeah, well, and we see how that goes. We see the venom come out early from that crowd, right? Look, I don't know why it's 3-1 all of a sudden. Let's just everybody just relax.
You knew this is how this is going to be, Adam.
I'm from Noblesville, like Noblesville, Indiana. Okay, yeah. So that's the way it's going to be. the Open Championship first played in 1860 in Scotland. Mike, the golf history is rich in tradition, and it's rich in its morals and its values. Why do you think the game of golf still to this day looks back at it as its history and its birth as the true stories of the game, and give people that feeling that they're doing something that has been done for hundreds of years?
I think it's, you just think about, there have been people playing this game since the 15th century, and it's just one of those things that's cool to think about. I mean, obviously the game itself has changed a lot since then, but I just really think that it's one of those, to have that connection, especially, I think, especially in the U.S., people like to think back to their roots within their, so many Scottish Americans, Irish Americans, folks that their families have immigrated to the U.S., and I think there's that kind of connection back to
the old country.
The old country.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's what, you know, a lot of it comes from.
So apparently the sport's origins date back all the way to the year 1297. when the Dutch developed a sport called apocryphilia. That sounds like it sounds
that
made up.
That doesn't sound good.
No, that sounds terrible, that's actually. That sounds like something that's, that comes with a 20-year sentence. Yeah. all right, so let's move on.
You're right. It does. Absolutely.
Patty, what do you think of that? Huh? That hit you right there in the humor bone, didn't it?
It's still not illegal in the North of Scotland.
Yeah. Golf in America, the Chicago Golf Club was founded in 1892, and its first course, it was the first golf course built. Downers Grove, Charles Blair McDonald is considered the founding father of golf in America. So the oldest golf course in America, according to where I go for a majority of my truth, the internet, is the Chicago
that's
golf club.
I didn't know that, actually. That's a that was a new piece of information for
that
me.
Could be false. So I don't know.
You've enlightened me today. Well, I'm very aware of that, but I'm going to go double check it later.
I would tell everybody to go double check a majority of what the hell we said. The lowest score ever, it's talking about the history of golf and the different facts here. The lowest score ever. Again, according to the internet, over an 18-hole course is 55. It was achieved by Ryan Gibson from Australia at the River Oaks Golf Club in Edmond, Oklahoma in 2012. Ew. Ryan's round included 2 eagles, 12 birdies, and the rest of the holes were par for a score of 55.
Did somebody attest to that?
No idea. Absolutely no idea.
Or this guy just make it up. Yeah. He just put it on the internet. Put
Can
it
you
on
imagine
his,
that?
And on his Wikipedia page.
It's hard.
I'm Ryan Gibson. I shot 55.
Oh, it is Ryan. It's Ryan Gibson. You're right. Yeah. What did I say?
You said Ryan.
Oh, okay.
You're fine.
Right. Good. Thank you.
For once.
Ryan Gibson, 55. Let's look him up. Producer Shane, can we get Ryan Gibson on the program? Right. All right. There's no chance. There's no chance that is followed up on. All right. Now let's talk about the history of whiskey, Mike. Whiskey was originally used as a medicine, both as an internal anesthetic and an external antibiotic. Distilling techniques were brought to Ireland and Scotland sometime between 1100 and 1300 by monks. Since wine was not easily obtained, barley beer was distilled into a liquor, which became whiskey. Boys, do I have that right?
Sounds vaguely right, yes. In fact, the idea of who...
Close enough for me.
Indeed. Yeah. I mean, the story of exactly who decided to put something into a still and distill for the first time is kind of... They think it might even go back to the Egyptians, the ancient Egyptians. So,
Who's the guy that you know, they were using this as an external antibiotic and then said...
I'm going to drink this.
What if we just drank this?
I'm going to drink this. There's got to be a quicker way to happiness.
Well, I mean, you know, they didn't exactly have the FDA back then, so I'm sure it was.
You know, hey, Carol, come here. I'm not going to put this on my wound, my open
I'm just
wound.
Drink it straight out.
Drink it straight up.
I think this external antibiotic thing, I think that was the excuse from the start.
Sure.
Yeah. He'd learn this stuff tastes good to begin with.
Absolutely. Everybody knows. So we're talking to Patty and Ian now, and you know, you guys have done something that most people dream of. You're starting your own distillery in one of the greatest places in the world to visit. Tourists there, they flock by the millions throughout the year. It is an incredible piece of land and property that you guys have now on the Port of Leith. Tell us a little bit about what you're building, what you're creating, and what you're bringing to the world when it comes to whiskey, gin, spirits, and an experience over in Scotland.
So what we're doing is we've built a small piece of land down in the docks with Leith, right next to where the old bonded warehouses and all the old whiskey heritage used to be. And we're building something completely different. We're building a brand new building that's going to be 9 stories tall. It's going to be the first vertical distillery in Scotland. And it's going to bring a whole new scientific angle towards manufacturing whiskey.
Yeah. I mean, Edinburgh, you know, Scotland's capital city, and, you know, people think of Scotland golf and whiskey and so much history and heritage there. What we're doing is returning an industry that used to be in Scotland's capital city. It dominated the place, and for two guys who grew up there, it's an incredibly exciting thing for us to be doing. So, we, you know, this started as two whiskey fans sat on a sofa just sipping whiskey and going, wouldn't it be great to make this stuff? Then it got a bit out of control because we sort of had a wee go at making it in our back garden as well and learned a lot from that. And now here we are 7 years later, just started construction on one of the most exciting buildings to be built in our city in quite a long time.
So when you talk about the first, I mean, this is one of the first distilleries of its kind in Scotland, but it's the birthplace of whiskey for most people. There are distilleries over there. There are some great brands and some great companies that have done this. Why you guys? What is different and unique? And of all the things, now it's kind of like Mike and I, you know, with Stick and Hack. I mean, we're starting this golf brand. There's a lot of golf brands out there. Why did we do it? Well, it was built kind of the similar way that you guys were drinking. We said we should do this, and then 48 hours later, we were doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
And your story kind of fits the same as ours. Where did it go from, hey, this is a funny conversation we're having, sipping whiskey and drinking, now we can make this, to, oh, my God, now are business owners and we're actually going to be building a distillery.
Absolutely. Well, I guess it starts off, I mean, you know, growing up in Scotland, you're surrounded by whiskey the whole time and it's just part of the culture and heritage. And we love that. You know, we grew up with that and we love the history and culture behind so many of the great brands that you see over here. You've got Macallan on the back bar there, things like that. But then at the same time, you know, we're kind of a new generation. We've been growing up watching like your amazing distilling revolution going over here in America. And we thought we want to bring a bit of that dynamism over here to Scotland as well. Because like so much of the recipes of current, you know, whiskies, they are based on so much tradition and heritage. And actually, there are so many more things you could be doing within that, you know, if your grains, how you distill it, your fermentation. We've got a real focus on fermentation and because whiskey is distilled beer. You make a beer and then you distill it. And so we're really focused on that beer bit and trying to do something really new and exciting with a really old drink, if you like.
That's awesome.
So that's Ian. Patty, is it different for you or are you the same? Did you just decide, hey, let's just do this? And
were you like me? And he said, we're doing this? I said, okay.
Yeah, I came home one day and found that Ian had bought a still from Portugal online. And he was trying to work out how to get it through customs without alerting HMRC.
That's fantastic.
How'd that go?
Yeah, it was like, hey, does this thing get in through the port okay? And the guy in Portugal was like, yeah, we just label it machine parts and hopefully no one opens the box.
It's all fine.
Hey, yeah. That guy sounds like a winning strategy.
The guy was fired 12 hours
worked.
Later.
Yeah. But it worked,
you
know, here we are.
You guys had your idea 48 hours later, you were doing it with Scotch whiskey. Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. You know, we have to, you make your whiskey and you've got to sit on it for years and years. You know, right. 3 years before you can call it Scotch whiskey and many more years before you can sell it. So it's been a really long journey for us. And actually, a big part of it was finding where else could we get money in the meantime, because we can't sell anything for years and years. So the idea for us, as you say, Edinburgh, we get millions of visitors. And if we put the distillery at the right place, then loads of people can come and see us. So we've got a great site just down in the harbour in Edinburgh. And it's where we're right next to the Royal Yacht Britannia. So any of these people out there who like to watch The Crown, you see that a lot in The Crown. That's the ship that the Queen and the Duke of Edinburgh used to sail around the world in. And it's right next to our distillery now. It's a big, big visitor attraction in Edinburgh. So that's another part of what we're doing, just creating an awesome visitor experience for people to come and see and experience whiskey. And making a bit of gin, too. Yeah. So this all took so long, we even had time to set up a gin distillery and start distributing gin.
Gin's got a bit of a comeback right now, too. And it's huge, right?
Gin in the UK is going absolutely bonkers. There must be 100 new gin distilleries in the last 5 years.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
you can't throw a brick in a cheap industrial estate without hitting a gin distillery.
Yeah,
and then it bouncing off that and hitting another one.
Yeah, and then hopefully never hitting yours.
No, absolutely not.
Over here, all we get is we have the Bombay Sapphire. We get Hendrix. I think that's about it.
Well, you're just about to get Linden Lime.
Wait.
I can tell you that.
Baby.
I can't wait. I need a little gin flavor in my life.
It's kind of like the IPA and the craft beer distilleries here in America. We've got a lot of those, and almost anybody who can make beer is making beer, and it starts with a brand, and it almost ends with a brand, because after a while, the IPAs and the beers. I mean, how many different ways can you make it? Apparently a lot,
because
there's so many new things. Is that kind of where you're at with your product?
I guess so. It was kind of interesting because we were so focused on making whiskey, and for a long time we thought, that's so much crazy stuff going on with gin, let's just focus on the whiskey. But then we saw there is so much crazy stuff going on with gin, let's try and dial it back, go back to what a real gin should taste like, try and do something really pure and simple and do it really, really well. And that's what we did with our product. We just created a benchmark London dry gin. And, you know, you talk about brands and stuff like that. Well, what we decided to do, Leith, where we're from. So Leith is the harbour area of Edinburgh, and it's just steeped in history. All Scottish history passed through Leith. I can tell you a bit of golf history attached there as well. But we decided to our product would be all about it. So you've got a bottle there. Leith is where all the casks of whiskey and sherry would arrive in the harbour, and they all had to be decanted into wine bottles. So there's a massive wine bottle manufacturing industry in Leith, and that's what inspired our bottle shape. Lind and Lyme, James Lind, was a doctor from Edinburgh who identified that citrus fruit prevents scurvy, and he cured scurvy for the world. And that was a great local story for us. Leith as well is where a man called Dr. Lachlan Rose, back in the 19th century, sailors needed to get citrus fruits for their voyages, and he found a way to preserve limes with sugar, and he created Rose's Lime Cordial, which many of you will come across over here, owned by Coca-Cola, now a massive global brand, and that was created in Leith. So we could have created a product that made a great gin but told so many stories about where we're from.
That's fantastic. I love all that.
Yeah, I did too. I thought cool. We were just supposed to drink it straight up.
No. You have to have a history lesson. No. And then there's this exam. No, there's no exam.
So first off, I know this difference, but I'll bet you $100 that Adam doesn't. So explain the difference between whiskey and bourbon, especially for people in the U.S. Bourbon's huge over here.
I'm going to hand over to my bourbon consultant, Patty.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I actually found this out on the internet yesterday.
Fantastic.
That's where we get all of our information.
Yeah, I hear it's really like legitimate information. So there's three main differences between bourbon and Scotch whiskey. Scotch whiskey is only ever made from malted barley or wheat, whereas bourbon is mostly made from corn, with a little bit of rye and a little bit of barley thrown into the mix. The second major difference is that a whiskey in Scotland is made in a pot still, where it's just it's a single chamber. You throw in your ingredients, you lock it up, you boil it, and then you got to clean it out, and it's a one-shot game. Whereas bourbon, you tend to make in a column, so it never ends. You keep pumping stuff in the bottom, and it keeps coming out the top, and you just do that forever. And then the third big difference is in the casks. So in Scotland, we only ever use old, used casks. They've already had something in them already, normally bourbon. Whereas in the US, because you guys want to keep your barrel makers happy, you have to use brand new barrels.
Yeah.
But I think another interesting difference that I've noticed.
So what's the difference?
One's darker and the other one's a bit lighter.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
So if it's darker, it's bourbon. If it's a bit lighter, it's probably
perfect.
Scotch.
I thought I was going to get $100 though. That's right. Yeah. I was backing him.
Thank you. That was a bad bet.
He'll pay you after the show.
Okay, cool.
Just hold it up to the light. You'll work it out.
Yeah, but I think another key difference is, you know, so much about whiskey is maturation. You stick it in a barrel for so many years and you wait for it to mature. And of course, in America, you sometimes see the sun and it gets warm here and it's lovely. It's snowing outside at the moment. This reminds me of this great summer we had in Scotland once. So we've got a far colder climate.
It just melts on the ground.
Which means that we put stuff in a barrel and it matures really, really slowly. And actually, that's a good thing. I mean, we have to tell ourselves it's a good thing, but it means that over time you get far more sort of gentle oxidation, concentration of the spirit. And I like to think it creates a Scotch tends to be a bit more sort of delicate and to some degrees a bit more complex than a bourbon. But just to say, we love our bourbon.
So sure. I was with you guys last night, Mike and I both at an event, and listening to you talk about the spirit in the same tone that the wine snobs, sorry, people say talk about yeah, wine.
It's a backhanded compliment.
No, it wasn't a compliment. I assure you. And listening to you talk about the notes and the front end and all the things that I hear wine connoisseurs talk about, you were talking about as well with the different spirits, and that's your history. That's where you came from, is the wine world. Is that really something?
That is really something. Yes, clearly I didn't convince you last night.
Thing.
Yes.
Yeah, is it a thing, Patty? Yeah, I mean, to because I hear it and I want to believe it. I've been to some wineries. I've gone through the whole train. What are you shaking your head for, Mike? I'm trying to get to the facts here, okay? If we're not getting to the facts, then what the hell are we doing here?
Absolutely. You're such a caveman.
I don't have an extensive palate, okay? That doesn't
you
mean...
You don't.
No. No,
you like chicken fingers and fries.
Right, like every red-blooded American.
Yeah, sure.
So is this a thing, and tell me about the differences and notes that you feel in whiskey and
this
in Scotch.
Is absolutely a thing. So yeah, as you said, I came to this after 10 years in the wine trade, so you know I was a professional
wine snob.
Thank you. And actually, I imported a lot of wine from the US. I love the wine over here, and the thing is, coming from Scotland, we can't make wine, so I was just like, well, I'm never going to do that. We'll have to make whiskey. But yeah, wine, you know, when you smell a wine, you can go, okay, this smells a bit like red berries or blackcurrant, but you might also be able to say, oh, that smells a bit like vanilla as well, or tobacco or something like that. Like, it can smell of two things at the same time. Now, whiskey, for me, the real alchemy of it is it can smell of four or five different things. When you put it in your mouth, you know, like a good Scotch whiskey, it should hit you with maybe some cereal notes when you first get in, a bit of that barley, then maybe some fresh apricots and peach. Then you get through to your sort of secondary flavors, we call them, sort of caramel, maybe a bit of toffee, and then that little bit of vanilla from the cask. And that's complexity. That, for me, when I was first tasting whiskeys, and I go, this... It tastes of more than one thing. That's how can that happen? And that's the real magic of a great, great whiskey. Complexity. That's what we look for.
I'm hungry now. I mean,
cereal notes.
Does that that makes me want to go?
I'm not talking Kellogg's.
I know, well, I don't know that.
Like delicious. Sounds delicious.
I got three kids.
That's all I know. So it makes me want to drink whiskey and eat.
When you say cereal notes, I'm hearing honeycomb.
Honeycomb.
Yeah. Right. So just pour it on your cornflakes.
It may be the accent. I don't know.
Yeah. It could be. Maybe it could be. Patty. Why mess with something that has been so great for 600, 800 years and has this life and this incredible history and heritage in the spirit world, and bringing people together through the true power of whiskey and alcohol and camaraderie and all that? Why mess with it?
You're talking about whiskey or golf?
I'm talking about whiskey right. But golf, and my God, it's almost like you work here, Patty. I'll tell you that there's some very specific nuances between golf and whiskey, and we'll get into that. But for this specific question, why mess with whiskey? How are you even making a new whiskey?
You should never stay still. I think if you accept for the fact that you're making a great product or you've got a great ingredient, if you think that that's going to be the end game and that'll be it forever, then someone will come in and take that crown from you. And one of the reasons why Ian and I got into this is because, being, you know, very proud of Scotland and proud that Scotch is the global premium beverage, if you're not innovating and constantly trying to push yourself harder in terms of what that can be, what that flavor can be, can you make nicer whiskey, then someone's going to take it away from you, and suddenly it'll be Australian whiskey is the best thing in the world, and we'll have failed.
Yeah, imagine that.
I know, imagine that.
Yeah, I think it's probably real easy for...
That guy Ryan is going to start making whiskey and beat us all.
Well,
55, and the best whiskey in the world. Yeah. He's just nailed both of these like an industry.
Exactly. I think that's one of the things. It's like the Scotch industry is so old and has been around for so long that it's owned by so many large conglomerates at this point that it's like it's hard for them to even think about innovating with it, because it is what it is, and they're like, we're making money off of this. And
well, absolutely, it takes it, so long to.
I think it's amazing what I love what you guys are doing in trying to add a new spin to it and do something new and but still, you're sticking to the basics
Fact.
Of it, and trying to but taking it a new note on it. I love it.
Thank you very much.
Amazing.
Our guests are Ian and Patty from the Port of Leith Distillery, and they are attempting to do something that nobody has done over there, which is to create this vertical experience as well. You're on an incredible piece of land. You've got people coming through. You're going to have a restaurant. If people go over there to golf, and they should, and the tourists go, they're going to come to you. You've got a sign, and I don't know who's in charge of branding, but on the side of your building is going to be a sign that says whiskey.
Yes.
That's so smart. I don't know how much it cost you guys to come up with that.
we had a few agencies. They paid
you did. And so I'm sure that was hundreds of thousands of dollars. And someone's like, why don't you just put whiskey on the side?
For a long time, it was saying golf. And we're saying, this doesn't work.
It doesn't make any sense. doesn't make any sense.
There's a guy with a sign that said golf sale. Just outside the door.
Why do you think golf and whiskey go together so well?
I think there's a big thing about whiskey where you have a whiskey when you've achieved something, you know, when you can sit down, you can feel satisfied, and, you know, well, number one, in Scotland, we like to take things very slowly. So if we want to play a game, we're going to spend all day doing it. You know, we're going to walk several miles. And then it's, you know, and we're going to do it in the rain and the wind. And then we're going to get into golf, into the clubhouse, and we're going to sit down and we're going to have something very beautiful that's just going to sit down. And it's taken almost as long as our golf game to produce. but actually a bit longer than that. Yeah. But yeah, I think there is the same sort of appreciation of time, of ingenuity, of tradition, and they just go hand in hand. They've got the same philosophy, the same attitude behind them.
That's amazing.
Are you guys golfers? Either one of you golf?
We are both
right.
really bad golfers.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then this side of the table
fit in here perfect. You guys all over there.
Don't be that guy. Don't be that guy.
My dad was for a long time a member of a really historic golf club in Edinburgh called the Brunsfield Golf Course, and like this place, you know, had like a 30-year waiting list and stuff like that. And he held on to his membership in case any of his sons should become, you know, or daughters should become good at golf. I remember the day he just, it's just not happening. I'm getting out of this.
What an absolute waste of money this is. Yes. My God. Why don't you go make whiskey or something?
This is a waste.
Why don't you just leave us alone? All right, so you're currently on an investment tour around the United States. You're going to a lot of different people, and you're explaining what an education, investment and education tour to different distributors and to different bars and letting them know, hey, here's what's happening, here's what we're doing, and here's why it's important. What is the difference? And you've been to San Francisco, Seattle, Chicago, a lot of the big cities, and you're seeing all with probably different personalities and different feelings on whiskey and bourbon. But your feelings and what the reactions you're getting across the country, what are they for your product as compared to some of the brands they've been carrying for years?
I think the biggest difference between coming to the US versus trying to raise some money in the UK is that in America, people are super enthusiastic. And you give them a story, and they will listen, and they'll be like, wow, I'm so pumped for you. This is awesome, guys. You're going to be amazing. I love your energy. And you do the same pitch in Scotland, and you get a bunch of sort of guys will sit there and like stare at you and go, no. And then they'll walk out. You're like, come on, man. Put my heart into this.
Yeah. We're a lot more reserved in Scotland. Yeah. We've got to be.
We've heard there's some negativity over there.
Well, I remember
you make money, but I'm not buying it.
Yeah. My dad didn't even give me a middle name because he thought it was an extravagance, you know. So it's that sort of attitude. Right. So yeah.
Right. Ian then gave himself the name Zorro as a middle name.
Oh, God. Ian, that was a night of whiskey, it sounds like.
That was just a small phase in my life, yeah. But you come out to America and, like, we're just so energized. By 2 weeks in this country, like, our confidence is sky high. We feel like we can take on the world. The attitude, the environment here is just so exciting. Well, and this interest in Scotch, like, is awesome.
It is. It's huge. And not only is there an interest, there's an interest in the story, and there's an interest in the history and what you guys are building on pristine land, but you're building something new on something very old, next to something very old, distilling and brewing and making something very old in a new way.
Yeah.
It is a true back and forth of a stick and a hack. Oh, my. Oh. Look at that.
Segway.
Hello. Good morning.
Keychain.
They don't pay me nothing for nothing.
You. Take him to the bridge.
You.
I'm really good.
You guy.
I'm really good. So in that vein, story is very, very important to you guys. Yeah. It's very important to Mike and I at Stick and Hack, the story of connecting golfers and like-minded people and the stories behind the game that people truly care about. If they're great or if they're okay or if they just play once a year, they want to know what about golf is exciting and the stories behind it. Story is very important to you. You told some stories earlier just about the bottle, about the way that you guys make your product. Why is it important? Why do people care of the story of your product?
So stories, history, tradition, that's our grounding that we build off, if you like. And, you know, although our building, if you see it, is the most modern sort of landmark you could look at, it's built on some incredible foundations. And, you know, if you just really draw into the history of where we're from, you take so much inspiration, much to build on. All of Scottish history passed through Leith. It was Scotland's gateway to the world. So any key moment in our history happened there. You know, and the Scotch whisky industry itself, Leith was the only port with a royal warrant for the bonding of spirits. So all whisky merchants would send their whisky to Leith. It would be matured there. And many of the greatest names in Scotch whisky actually emerged from our area. Sadly, it all disappeared in the 20th century. You know, they all retired to the countryside and cheaper areas. But you look back at Diageo, the biggest whisky company in the world, has its roots in Leith. So many amazing brands. So yeah, that history, that heritage, it's what brought Paddy and I to whisky in the first place. And that's the foundation that we're building on.
It's time now for a new segment on the show where our guests ask us questions. So now time for you guys to ask us, Mike and I, some questions. Go ahead.
So Adam, what drives you?
I refuse to answer that question.
Okay, fair enough.
I will not answer that question. All right, so let's move on. Do you have any questions for Mike?
That went well.
What got you into golf? Yeah.
Nobody cares. All right, here we go. The guest, Ian and Patty, leafdistillery.com to learn more and ask your local club to support Lime and Lime Gin. And in years to come, your whiskey as well. You guys are amazing and incredible. It's an incredible story. We are very proud and excited for your guys' rise. And we hope that your product becomes one of those we see on the shelf here and we go, my God, that remember when we started and brought them to success? That's what we'll say.
It began here, people. Yeah.
Yes, yep. Absolutely.
LeafDistillery.com for more information and read more of the stories of their place. So congratulations, guys, and good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for being on the Stick and Hack Show. We move now into the clubhouse. You know, we've been talking, Mike, a lot about history and the heritage of golf and of whiskey. So I figured, why the hell not? We can do whatever we want. Let's do a history quiz, right?
Okay.
Now, according to the internet, again, these history quizzes could be passed by a fifth grader. All right? So I'm going to ask you
that. That doesn't bode well for me.
It doesn't bode well for anybody. Anytime someone says you can be passed by a fifth grader, I typically fail miserably.
Well, they made an entire show about that. You realize that?
I do not.
Are you smarter than the fifth grader?
Oh, yeah, Foxworthy.
Remember that?
Yeah, I remember that now. Do you guys know that?
No.
No, why the hell would you?
They wouldn't.
Jeff Foxworthy only goes just to the East Coast, and that's where he stops and should. All right. So here's the history quiz. Fifth grade, are you smarter than the fifth grader type thing.
Okay.
Who was the first European to explore North America, Mike?
I would say Columbus, and I know that's wrong. So I don't know.
It is wrong.
Okay.
His name was Leif Erikson, which.
Okay. All right.
I'm sorry. Ian, do you know that?
He's
a big deal. Of course he does.
We were literally discussing this the other day because it's actually pronounced
life.
Yeah. Of course it is. Yeah. So he sounds made up. He sounds like a hockey player for the Maple Leafs. He does. He doesn't sound like a real person. So that's good to know. And congratulations. You guys are one for one.
Yes.
You know what? Why don't you play along with us here? The crowd can play along at home, and you guys can play along here.
Sure.
Okay. Which of these states was not one of the original 13 colonies?
Okay,
Georgia, Missouri, Rhode Island, or New Jersey? Which of these states was not?
Well, that one to me is pretty obvious, but
okay,
it's Missouri. But
right, that is accurate.
Yeah. Although Georgia would have been borderline for me.
Why is it obvious?
Because it's in the middle of the country. Oh. And we didn't even own it yet.
Very visceral reaction.
When the colonies existed?
Yeah, so it'd be like Montana being one of the 13.
Right. Like,
just way
again,
out of the middle of nowhere.
This is like the fifth grade history.
Right.
So
all right, so Missouri. You're right. All right, boys, this is something for you. What usually determines, you can't answer this because you've got insider knowledge.
Okay.
This is for Mike. By the way, this is a Stick and Hack Clubhouse history quiz. What usually determines whether the spirit is spelled whiskey with an EY or whiskey with a Y? What determines whether the spirit spelling is whiskey with an EY or with only a Y?
How many whiskeys you've had to drink?
That's a good point.
Know.
If you can even spell it at that point, you get a point.
I have no idea.
No, it, boys, do you know?
Geography.
Oh, my God. They're so smart.
They are.
You're so smart. You know, you come over here with your whiskey and your accents and you embarrass us. I'm done with it. It depends on the country. In some countries like Ireland and America, the E is prevalent. In other places such as Canada and Japan, the E is typically omitted.
Correct.
Correct. You spell it wrong over here.
Yeah.
We spell it wrong over here.
Well, you do it in your own little way. It's fine. You're doing your thing.
Right. I love it.
It's so cute what you guys do.
We appreciate it very much. And you guys are adorable as well.
Yeah.
All right. What's the, don't answer this, gentlemen. This is for Mike only. What's the minimum aging time for bourbon?
I have no idea. Yeah.
1,000 years?
1,000 years? I don't know.
An hour?
No idea.
Who the hell knows?
2 hours? Half a day?
The time it takes to get food here?
Yeah.
Boys, what's the answer? Is there a minimum aging time for bourbon?
It depends. If it's normal bourbon, it just has to be aged for an indefinite length of time.
So that could be a couple of hours.
It could be a couple of hours. If it's Kentucky straight bourbon, it has to be at least 2 years.
So the answer that I got from the internet was there really isn't one.
Mm. Aged.
Right. That's aged it. Is whatever it is. Yeah.
There is one company that just pumps it through a barrel. In like a continuous motion.
Right.
Mm. Aged.
That seems smarter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right? You can pump some product out that way, baby.
Yeah.
You don't have to put anything on a ship for 8 years and wait for it.
Yeah.
What's the, according to the U.S. guidelines, now you guys might not know this because it's U.S. According to the U.S. guidelines, what's the maximum alcohol content when bourbon is first poured into a barrel for the aging process? Here are your choices, Mike, as your eyes begin to get wider and wider. 45.1%, 62.5% or 46.7%. According to U.S. guidelines, what's the maximum alcohol content when bourbon is first poured into a barrel for the aging process?
I'm going to say, this is surprising me, and I think I might be right, but I don't know. I'm going to go with the 62.5%.
I would
concur.
Yeah,
we concur.
Because, and here's how I
know.
We
don't care why, you know.
Because it evaporates. Through the aging process, some of it evaporates. Incredible. So it has to end up at
Mike was listening last night.
Area.
Yeah.
That's
I was
why
drunk.
I think. That's why I think that.
That's Mike.
That's on me. When the bourbon is introduced into a barrel for aging, its alcohol content can exceed 62.5%. This rule is introduced in part to ensure the consistency and quality of the finished product.
Okay. Yeah.
And I'm sure there's a secondary answer that is more...
Yeah, because it evaporates.
All right.
That's aging.
And then, Mike, the last question. Which one of us, between you and me, fashions themselves a gin connoisseur?
You? Clearly?
Right.
Which I've never heard of before, but it's fine. Although, clearly, there are a bunch of them over in Scotland because it's gin's hot over there. So.
How do you know that I'm a gin connoisseur?
Because you tell me about it, like, every week.
All right. What are you, my sponsor? Why don't you calm down?
Yes.
Ian and Patty, Leith Distillery. Gentlemen, what an absolute pleasure and joy it was to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being here.
Pleasure. Thanks so much,
guys,
for having us.
Go to LeithDistillery.com and learn more about their incredible story and support their mission and their business. They're going to be massive, and we're proud to have them as part of the Stick and Hack. StickandHack.com, read the stories of golf, and sign up to be a member. And our members meeting is September the 18th and 19th. It's our first ever members meeting in Indianapolis. We're going to be drinking, eating, playing golf at the Brickyard. Amazing speakers and prizes. Go to stickandhack.com and sign up for the members meeting. Boys, we'll hope to see you there as well. It's going to be an expensive trip back over here to the States. That's not my problem. Mike, good show. Proud of you.
Thanks,
have
man.
A great week.
You
see
too.
You, boys.
Peace Cheers. Out, guys. Cheers. The Stick and Hack Show is now over. Subscribe, rate, comment, and tell your friends. You are now free to go about your day.